Beloved Book One, once Nansen decided to visit a village, but was very surprised to find that preparations had been made to welcome him. Nansen said to the village head, "It has been my custom never to let anyone know beforehand about where I am journeying to. How could you know that I was coming to visit your village today?" The village head replied, "Last night, in a dream, the god of the soil shrine reported to me that you would come to visit today." Nansen replied, "This shows how weak and shallow my spiritual life is, that it can be foreseen by visions."
Manisha, before discussing your sutras, I have to discuss something about nonsense way of tackling things, his methodology. Sometimes he looked very puzzling, will make contradictory statements on purpose. Unless you understand that the sutras you have brought to me, it will be difficult to find any rationality in them. And reason is the only thread that for the present you can grasp something of the beyond. On one occasion, the governor Lu Xuan said to Nansen, "What if I told you that a man had raised a goose in a bottle, watching it grow, until one day he realized that it had grown too large to pass through the bottle's neck. Since he did not want to break the bottle or kill the goose, how would he get it out?" A strange puzzle which cannot be solved rationally. Whatever you do, either you will have to destroy the bottle or the goose. You cannot save both. But the goose and the bottle are only metaphors of your witnessing self and your body. Your body is the bottle and your consciousness is the goose. And nobody ever wonders how the consciousness entered the body and how the consciousness can come out of it. The consciousness is universal, vast, infinite in all dimensions. And the body is so small, just like a small bottle. How this is being managed by existence? It is a miracle that the physical, the material contains within it the non-material, the spiritual. The governor was asking the question in the Zen tradition. This is an old story. Perhaps every master has to work on it. Nonsense shouted governor for a moment. The governor completely forgot that he is a governor and Nansen is just a beggar as far as possessions are concerned, and nobody is to shout at the governor the way he is shouting. And the question he has asked does not require, he forgot all. The shout was so sharp, like a sword. In a single blow, as he shouted, governor, and the governor said, yes, master. Nansen said, the goose is out. A very strange way of solving the problem. The governor showed his consciousness, expressed his consciousness. This consciousness is not hindered by the body. It can come out, it can go in. The body is not a barrier. The body is a barrier only to material things. But to the non-material, the non-material exists in a different dimension. It can enter the body without stirring anything in the body, without even touching the body. Nowhere in your life your consciousness ever touches your body. Whatever you do, your consciousness simply remains a witness far away on the hills. As if. Just think, you are standing before a mirror. The question is how your reflection entered the mirror. The mirror has no space to contain you. But certainly you are standing in the mirror. But if you watch carefully, you are standing in front of the mirror and watching your reflection in the mirror. Mirror is perfectly capable to reflect. It cannot contain you. Neither the body contains the spiritual element in you, nor the spiritual element contains the body. The spiritual element is just a mirror. It can at the most reflect the body, the mind, but it is always beyond, it is always out. That's what nansen means. The goose is out. As he shouted, "Governor," and the governor said, "Yes, sir," he is not asleep. He is perfectly awake. In this awareness, you are not the body, and you are not in the body. You are beyond. You are out. The goose is out. Different masters have worked on this small anecdote about the goose, but Nansen seems to be the best. Manisha has brought the sutra, "Beloved Bhagwan, once Nansen decided to visit a village, but was very surprised to find that preparations had been made to welcome him. Nansen said to the village head, 'It has been my custom never to let anyone know beforehand about where I am journeying to. How could you know that I was coming to visit your village today?' Why he was so insistent that nobody should know beforehand? The reason was that he wanted people to recognize what has happened to Nansen, the illumination. Unless they recognize it by themselves, he will pass the village. He won't stay in the village. It is not yet ready for Buddhas. People are fast asleep. They cannot see the invisible, and they cannot understand the eternal. Their noses are closed, their eyes are closed, their ears are closed. They don't have the sensitivity for the subtle, for the inner. They cannot experience the fragrance of one who has arrived home. That was the reason he will never allow anybody to know where he is going. Even his companions were not aware where he is going. Suddenly he will take turns. They may be imagining that this road leads to that place, and before reaching that place he may turn. His whole effort was to find out the people who can just by his presence feel something ringing in their hearts. He wanted to commune to receptive people. The world is vast, which is absolutely non-receptive people, full of people whose hearts have become so hard that nothing reaches to them. They hear and yet they miss, because they cannot listen. While they are hearing, their mind is doing thousand and one things. Even if a Buddha passes in front of them, it is not necessary that they will recognize. To recognize Buddha is to have some sensibility, some sensitivity. Just as to recognize the sun, you need eyes. To recognize a Buddha, you also need a certain quality, a clarity, a transparency. And unless you recognize, there is no point in wasting time on non-receptive people. Perhaps next life they may be able to receive. Perhaps this is not the right time for them, not ripe. Their season has not come. A Buddha can influence only a very few chosen people, for the simple reason because his influence is not of the mind. It is not an argument that convinces you. He will not even say that I am a Buddha. He would like you to recognize. From there the journey starts, the right point of departure. That's why Nansen did not want anybody to know that he is coming to their place. Because if they know already, without recognizing his Buddhahood, just traditionally, because he is well known, thousands of monks follow him, they will also mechanically, robot-like, worship him. But this is unnecessary. Wasting nonsense time and perpetuating blind, orthodox, traditional ways. He wanted to enter into a village as a stranger and see whether anybody can recognize him. And people used to recognize him who had not ever seen him, but just seeing him, something will go throw them like lightning. A heart will start dancing in a new tune. They will know that this man, although looks like everybody else, is very far away from us. His consciousness was overwhelming. It soured on people if they were receptive, like a rain cloud. But he was not ready to shower blindly the way the rain cloud showers. It does not care whether it is showering on the stones on the fields, on the good soil. It has no care. A cloud is a blind. It is simply heavy with rain and wants to get rid of it. Wherever the opportunity arises and there is enough coolness, its vapor becomes water, it sours. Nansen wanted to sour like a rain cloud, but not like a blind rain cloud. He did not want to sour on stones where nothing will grow. He will sour on right soil where something is possible to happen. He has used this method alone in the whole history of Zen. People ordinarily inform that they are coming to their village, so people are prepared. But Nansen has his own unique personality. If people are prepared, there is every danger that they will traditionally pay their respect and will not understand anything whom has visited them. He never allowed anyone to know. But this time it happened, the village had replied last night in a dream, the guard of the soil shrine reported to me that you would come to visit today. Nansen replied, this shows how weak and shallow my spiritual life is, that it can be foreseen by visions. He was a very honest man. Anyone in his place would have felt tremendous ego that even gods declare my coming, but on the contrary, he said this shows how weak and shallow my spiritual life is, that it can be foreseen by visions, by imaginary gods which are your creation, and you have seen in your dreams that he is coming. This perception through the vision or dream may have made anyone who was not authentically spiritual rejoice and declare himself that, look, even gods make declarations and predictions for me. But Nansen said this shows how shallow and weak my spirituality is, that you can read it even in your dreams. One of the most important quality of a religious man is his honesty about himself, his humbleness, his egolessness. He is as if he is not. He does not feel gratified by appraisal. He does not feel any superiority in his spirituality. But the ordinary religious people find in trivia to fulfill their egos. I have heard there were 3 monasteries of Christians belonging to different sects. One day the 3 abbots, just by chance walking in the early morning, met on the crossroads. They welcomed each other and they bragged. One who belonged to the Catholic monastery said that your monasteries are good, but you cannot beat us in our scholarship. Our monks are the most scholarly. The second one was a Baptist Christian. He said, you are right. It is true, your monks are very scholarly, but scholarship has nothing to do with spirituality. Real spirituality is discipline, ascetic. On that point, you cannot beat us. Our monks are the most ascetic, most disciplined. The third one said, which was a Protestant monastery, that it is all nothing. As far as humbleness is concerned, we are the tops. Even humbleness can be used to fulfill the ego. And in the name of religion, all kinds of stupidities are being perpetuated because they fulfill the ego. For example, the Baptist abbot has said that nobody can beat our monks, as if it is an ego game. Nobody can beat in ascetic disciplines. And it is true, compared to anybody, the Baptist monk is the most masochistic. He tortures himself so much just to be praised by people. I am reminded of a story. A young man entered a Baptist monastery. He was told by the abbot that I have to warn you, this is a Baptist monastery. Great discipline is needed. For example, you are allowed only to speak once in 7 years. The man said, I have come with great decision. Every discipline I am ready to follow. But he was not aware what is going to be his fate. He entered his cell. And he found that there was no mattress. Now he cannot speak. 7 years he has to wait for the mattress. He said, my God, I will not survive 7 years in this cold weather. Snow is falling out. There is no mattress, just a small blanket. But he has promised, and it has become an ego point. He remained 7 years suffering. As 7 years passed, he was very happy. He went to the abbot and he said that by God's grace, I have survived. There is no mattress in my cell. The abbot said, the mattress will be sent. You go back. And for 7 years, no more complaint. The poor fellow has not complained for 7 years. Mattress came, but the mattress was big and the room was not that big and the door was very small. So by pushing the mattress in, the workers broke the glasses of the window. Somehow they fixed it, but the glasses were broken. He had suffered through cold, now he started suffering from rains. Water will come directly in the cell. And he was sitting covered with his tattered blanket. Seven years again before the glass can be fixed in the window. After 7 years he went to the abbot and abbot said, again? Have you got any complaint again? He said, it is not a complaint, but 7 years I have suffered from rains. Those workers have broken my window. It was better to be without mattress. I have become accustomed, but to remain always afraid of rains, the monk said, the abbot, that your window will be repaired, but don't come again in this life. With any complaint. And the situation became the same. The workers came to fix the glass and he could not speak. And those idiots pulled out the mattress so that they can work comfortably on the window and fix the glass. They fixed the glass and left the mattress out. Again the situation was same, in fact worse. Now 7 years looked really next life. Perhaps he may be able to ask that my mattress is out. He tried to pull it in, but there was no way, it was too big. And the abbot has said, now in this life you have complained enough. You have done nothing else since you came. Complaint, complaint. But these people think that they are doing something spiritual. Stupidity has many names. One of them is spirituality. Zen is not at all interested in decorating the ego. On the contrary, its whole effort is how to empty you, how to make nothing of you, not something. From my very childhood, my relatives, my neighbors, my well-wishers used to say, the way you are growing, you will end up into nothing. Because I used to sit for hours silently by the side of the river, and people have become accustomed. They will not even ask what you are doing, because I was not doing anything at all. But their prophecy was right. I ended in nothing. But that is the greatest blessing, if you can end up in being nothing. Good for nothing. Only out of that nothingness blossom thousands of roses. Humbleness is not practiced and cultivated by the Zen. It is a simple outcome, a byproduct of deep meditations. As you go deeper, you start forgetting that the whole world is struggling to become something, somebody special, more riches, more power. Everybody is trying to make history. And you are disappearing almost like a smoke in the sky. But those who can disappear just like a smoke in the sky, leaving no trace behind, no footprints behind, they are the only ones who come to know the splendor of existence, the beauty of this universe, and the truth and the divinity, and they are just the beginning of great mysteries. Doors upon doors go on opening for the humble one, and he remains simply a watcher. That is the ultimate. You don't possess anything. In a sense, and in another sense, you possess the whole universe. But there is no possessiveness. You have entered into the essentials, into the eternal mystery of life and death, and you have found one thing, that everything changes except the witness in you. The witness is the only permanent phenomenon Even Himalayas will come and disappear. One day there was no Himalaya. It is not very old. It is a very new mountain. Just in Rig Veda, the ancient most book of the Hindus, Himalaya is not mentioned. It is impossible not to mention Himalaya. It seems that Himalaya grew after Rig Veda. Because Himalaya is not referred at all in the Rig Veda, when other small mountains, Vindhya, Satpura, rivers, is small in comparison to Himalayas. Lokmanya Tilak, a Hindu scholar from this city, Pune, argued against all the scholars who were trying to prove that Rig Veda is only 5,000 years old. He argued that Rig Veda is at least 90,000 years old. Just because on two arguments, one was that Himalaya is not referred at all, while small mountains are referred. There is no reason not to refer Himalaya. Himalaya must have grown after Rig Veda. And the people who wrote Rig Veda had come from Mongolia. The whole civilized nations of the world have come from Mongolia. Mongolia was the origin particularly of Aryan races. Negroes have not come from Mongolia, neither the South Indians. But the Germans, the North Indians, the English, the French, the Italians, the Norwegians, the Swedish, the Swiss, the Greeks, they all have come from one original source, Mongolia, because all their languages have a certain percentage of Sanskrit. Coming from Mongolia, you have to pass the Himalaya. And to pass the Himalaya is not a small thing. If Himalaya was there and the Aryans passed the Himalaya without mentioning ever anything about it, it seems impossible. Lokmanya Tilak argument has a validity, but even more valid, he describes in the Rig Veda a constellation of stars that also happened 90,000 years before. And that constellation of stars is described in absolute detail. So it is not something you cannot imagine it, and it has not happened since then. It may happen again sometime, but perhaps millions of years will pass again that the stars will come into that constellation again. These two arguments were so valid that they have not been answered by any Christian missionary, because all Christian missionaries were trying to push Rig Veda as closer to us as possible. The reason was because according to Christian Bible, the world was created just 4,004 years before Jesus Christ. It must have been certainly Monday, January. But not far away. Just from here, 6,000 years old. So they have to fix in that framework, everything has to fix within 6,000 years. They are giving as much rope for Rig Veda as possible, 5,000 years. They cannot accept that Rig Veda was written 90,000 years before, because that will disturb their whole Bible. But Bible is not an argument. And there are thousands other proofs that Bible is wrong. This earth itself, according to scientific measurements, has been in existence for 4 million years. On the Himalayas, skeletons of sea animals have been found. 60,000 years old. That shows that between 60,000 and 90,000, sometime Himalaya came out of the ocean. So many ocean animals, otherwise the ocean animals cannot reach in any way to the tops of Himalaya. They cannot travel from the great Indian Ocean, that is the closest, but there is no way for sea animals, they don't have legs, they cannot reach to the tops just to die there and just to create trouble for historians. Authentic religions are not concerned with such matters. Such matters belong to science. Anything objective belongs to science. Religiousness is absolutely subjective. It belongs to your inner depths. And the deeper you go into your inner depths, the more and more you find an empty sky. But this empty sky contains all the Buddhas. This empty sky of your being is your ultimate experience. Nobody has gone beyond it. The blessing of it, the benediction of it, the fulfillment of it, a tremendous at ease with existence. You have come home. Nansen says, how shallow and weak my spiritual life must be, that people can see it in their visions, in their dreams. A very honest fully aware of great possibilities of falling into the paths of ego . This made him a great master. Those who followed him, he never called them followers, because that is again the ego trip. Teachers who have many followers think they are great teachers, just because of the numbers. Numbers are important in politics, but are not important in your spiritual growth. It is possible a Buddha may be without any follower. That simply shows his height is so much that nobody can see that far. And a clever parrot-like scholar or pandit or a rabbi may have great following, because people can understand whatever he says, it is not coming from the beyond, it is coming from his mind. Hence your mind can comprehend it very easily. Nansen has not followers, but fellow travelers. He is the first one who used the word fellow travelers. Moving towards the same center of life together. there is no question of master and disciple. That does not mean that the disciples had no respect for Nansen. On the contrary, they had more respect because he never asked for respect. There are things if you ask, you will never get. And if you don't ask, you will be soured with. He never asked for any gratitude or any respect. He never asked that I am the master and you are the disciple. That created a totally different kind of commune. And he was loved and respected more than any master for the simple reason because he was so humble, so undemanding, and so sharing of his empty heart and the freedom of humbleness. You may not have thought about it, that ego can never have any freedom. It depends on others. Sitting on a Himalayan peak alone, can you think yourself as a great man? But the Pope can think himself a great man because he has 600 million Catholics followers. No religious head has that many number of followers. But this is a way of politics, not of religion. And the ways of the ego are so subtle that I have heard about a saint who was living alone in the deep mountains. A traveler came to him just passing by. He thought the saint is close by. To give him a visit. He used to think that there must be many followers, but there was no one. He was alone. The stranger said to him that people in the world who have many followers think they are great. But I think they are all egoists. They are using numbers rather than rupees. As a support to their ego, the old saint smiled and he said, I am the only one who has no followers. I am the only one. Remember, such subtle are the ways of ego. Even this becomes the same trip. There is no difference. Humbleness has to remember that ego always comes from the back door if you throw it from the front door. And in your life there are many doors, many of which you are not even aware. Unless you are fully aware and your house is full of light, the shadow of the ego will not be able to enter. But it is not a question of cultivation. I have seen in temples written in golden letters that if you are humble, you will be respected by all. A strange advice. Then one becomes humble just to be respected by all. You cannot cultivate these qualities, because for cultivating any quality, you need some goal, some greed. Humbleness comes as a byproduct, not as a goal. When you are deep in your meditation, feeling absolutely nothing, just witnessing emptiness, humbleness comes on its own. Nansen was certainly a man of great understanding, but this understanding is not scriptural, scholarly. This understanding has grown through his meditations. For 30 years he was continuously meditating. For 30 years he was just sitting and watching inside. Slowly, slowly thoughts disappear, dreams disappear. All dust settles. The sky within becomes absolutely clean and clear. For 30 years he did not come out of the mountains. It was Governor Huswan who persuaded him that it is enough. 30 years you have meditated. Now it is time. You should come down to the plains and share your experience. Huswan's persuasion worked, because it reminded Nansen that what great treasures he has got into his emptiness. And there are millions of people who are living like beggars, although inside them there is such majestic such mysterious treasures, he agreed to Huswan and came down to the plains. Immediately, thousands of deeply interested people in searching for their self surrounded him. His monastery was one of the biggest monasteries in Japan. Sekiso A Zen poet has written, you climb Mount He on ladders of cloud. I walk out of Kyoto with a bamboo stick, 1,000 miles apart, like the stars of the north. This is our one chance to remind each other that we are friends. He is saying it does not matter in what century, in what place you became enlightened. The moment you become enlightened, you become contemporary to all the enlightened ones of the past and the future. There is a kind of brotherhood of those who reach to the ultimate peak of awakening. Manisha has asked a question. Beloved Bhagwan, in the life of a disciple, is there a point of no return? Manisha, I will have to explain to you there are three categories which you can find around a master: the student, which is the soloist. He has come to accumulate some knowledge. He will never go inside. He will simply take notes, become a great scholar, knowledgeable. The second is the disciple who follows not accumulating the knowledge but practicing it, finding out whether it has any truth in it or not. Is this only a philosophy or an authentic spiritual experience? And the third is the devotee who has become one with the master. Your question is, in the life of a disciple, is there a point of no return? In the life of a devotee, there is a point of no return. But a disciple can go back. A disciple is still separate from the master. A disciple still keeps a certain distance. In fact, he is afraid to come too close. A master is fire. Coming too close means to be burnt. Burnt the way you are. All that is false will be burnt, and only the pure gold will remain. The disciple keeps himself a little far away. The student is absolutely far away. He has nothing to do with the master. He has just to collect fragments of knowledge and go on his way. The disciple is in between the student and the devotee. The disciple can go away. But the devotee has merged himself in the fire. The Upanishads say that the master is a death. To come too close to him, you will have to die as you are. Of course, you will be reborn. The Upanishadic statement is only half. The master is a death and a resurrection. But one has to have that much courage to die. One never knows whether he will be resurrected or not. A great trust that this death is the death of the superficial and the false. And when the false and the superficial have died down, there arises your true individuality, your 24-karat gold. So your question is right about the devotee, Manisha, but not about the disciple. Now, something serious. Fred Frump walks into the pub and orders a beer and a whiskey. He drinks the beer and then he pours the whiskey into the top pocket of his coat. Give me another beer and another whiskey, says Fred, wiping his lips. The bartender does, and the same thing happens. Fred drinks the beer and dumps the whiskey into his coat pocket. This goes on several more times, and finally the puzzled bartender asks, "Hey, what is the big idea?" "None of your business," says Fred drunkenly. and don't be so nosy or I will punch you in the nose. Just then a mouse pops his head out of Fred's coat pocket and shouts, and that also goes for your goddamn cat. Chester and Betty Cheese are having some trouble with their sex life. Betty always has a headache when Chester wants to make love. So Chester sends her to Dr. Feelgood, the psychiatrist, for treatment. It is simple to cure, says the shrink. Whenever you feel a headache coming on, just sit on the edge of your bed and repeat over and over, "I have not got a headache. I have not got a headache." Betty is doubtful about this, but the very next night she sits on the edge of her bed and tries it out, and it works. So for the next few weeks there is sexual harmony in the Cheese household. But then Chester gets a problem. He can't get his machinery hard anymore. So Betty sends him to Dr. Feelgood, and sure enough, for the next few weeks, there is no stopping Chester. He has got the strength of a bull. But he has one new habit which annoys Betty. Every night he insists on going to the bedroom 10 minutes before her. So one night she sneaks upstairs behind Chester and looks through the keyhole. There is Chester sitting on the edge of the bed, repeating over and over, "She is not my wife." Pope the Polar and Cardinal Rump are having a terrible argument in the Pope's private chambers. The noise and screaming is so bad that half of the Vatican comes to put their ears to the door to listen to what is going on. "Just drop dead," screams Cardinal Rum. "Go to hell," cries the Pollock at full volume. "Kiss my ass," shouts back the Cardinal. "Ah," says the Pope with surprise, "so now you want to be friends?" be silent. Close your eyes. Feel your body to be completely frozen. And now look inwards with absolute urgency, as if this moment is the last moment of your life. Go deeper. The center is not far away. Just one single step. Deeper and deeper, because at the center you are the Buddha. At the center your lotus blossoms. You feel for the first time blessed. Blessed just to be, for no reason at all. The greatest experience of life is to experience your Buddhahood, and Buddhahood simply means witnessing. Watch your body, watch your mind. And remember, you are neither. You are just a pure witness, a mirror, in which everything reflects. Clouds come and go. Months come and go. Eternity is your nature. Only you remain. Everything moves from death to birth, from birth to death. Just a circle of movement. But within the circle, the center is absolutely immobile. To make it more clear, Nividano, relax. Just watch the body, the mind, and be only a witness. You are not supposed to do anything. Just be a witness. A mirror does not do anything when it reflects you. Just be a mirror-like witness. The evening was beautiful on its own. But the 10,000 Buddhas disappearing into a silent witnessing has made it very golden. So many flowers start showering on you. So much joy that you have never known before. Such a serenity such a beatitude you have never dreamt about, but it is your nature. Collect as many flowers and fragrance before Nivedana calls you back. You have to bring your Buddhahood with you from the center to the circumference. You have to constantly remember in your actions, words, silences that you are a Buddha, and this will become the greatest possibility of transformation from mortality into immortality, from the false to the truth. Nivedana, come back, but come back as Buddhas, with the same grace, with the same silence, without any hurry. Sit down for a few moments, just to recollect the space you have been in, the path that you have traveled forward and backward. This is the track that you have to continuously move on. The deeper this track becomes, more your Buddhahood becomes clear. I don't want anybody to be a Buddhist. I want everybody to be a Buddha. Okay, Manisha?
Yes.
Can we celebrate the 10,000 Buddhas?
Yes.